We trust you and we love you in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, God bless you and you may be seated. Our subject for today is why this waste? Why this waste? For the past few weeks, we've been addressing questions that were asked, that were presented to Jesus, questions from and questions about Jesus. Some questions reveal the character and the motive of the one that's asking the question, right? But our questions today, and this particular episode, is from the final week of Jesus' life. And I thought that since we're in this season, right, this resurrection season, or as it's more commonly called in the West, this Easter season, and particularly as we have designated next Sunday, quote, right, as the observance of the resurrection, I thought it'd be good to look at the questions that were asked in that final week, yeah? In that final week leading up to the crucifixion, what kind of things were people interested in? What kind of questions were being asked, right? And so that's where this episode is taken from, the final week of Jesus' life. And there are many important lessons here, all right? There are many important lessons that were taught, and there are many important lessons to be learned. So as we do this, I want to remind you that we're looking for insights from the questions in our text, okay? We're looking for insights. As I alluded to when we began this journey together, questions are very revealing, okay? And so let's see what we can learn from these questions here. The first question we're going to examine is, why this waste? That was the first question we meet in our text. The second question we meet in our text is, why do you trouble the woman? Okay, two questions in this little paragraph, that's happening in this final week of his life. And so let's think about this together. The first question. Want to draw your attention to where the episode takes place. It's in Bethany, right? Bethany was the hometown of Mary, Martha, and Lazarus, okay? You remember that? And I believe this gathering was probably at their house. Now, I'm aware of the fact that the text says that this was Simon's house, and I want to elucidate on that a little bit. But we don't want to get bogged down with that, okay? I'm saying that this gathering was probably at Mary, Martha's, and Lazarus' home. When you go back to verse 6, turn there. Lost my place here. Here we go. Okay, Matthew 26 and verse 6, it says, "Now when Jesus was at Bethany in the house of Simon the leper." But now when you go to John chapter 11 and verse 1, listen, it says, "Now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha." Okay. Now, one more bit of insight as you go a little bit further in John, move on to the next chapter. Okay, John chapter 12. Look at verses 1, 2, and 3. You got that? 6 days before the Passover. Okay, so we're what? We're in this final week. You got it? 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany, where Lazarus was, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. So they gave him a dinner. So they gave a dinner for him there. Martha served, and Lazarus was one of those reclining with him at table. Mary therefore took a pound of expensive ointment made from pure nard and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume, okay? And so, again, I don't want anybody to get into any kind of internal conflict over this. We don't want you to be conflicted. I'm just saying that I believe that this dinner was probably at the home of Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. And so you say, well, what's the deal with Simon? Well, it's possible. Now, we don't have details, but it's possible that Simon owned the home before. And y'all do know that lepers, when a person experienced leprosy, it affected their entire life, including the house where they lived, right? excuse me. They had to be cleansed. The house had to be cleansed. Y'all know that they looked for leprosy in the walls. And I mean, it was a big ordeal. Kind of like the experience that we're talking about with the mold. You see downstairs, no trace of the leprosy could be left because it would continue to grow and infect, okay? And so it's possible that Simon owned this home previously and is still called the home of Simon the leper. Now, you don't have to get all angry and say that's not what my commentary says. I'm just saying that's a possibility. But I am saying that I believe that there is strong enough evidence to indicate that this is at Mary, Martha, and Lazarus' home. Okay, everybody all good? Okay with that? All right. So, then you'll notice that they were practicing hospitality, yes? And you all know what hospitality is, right? Sharing your home and, a meal and being generous to a neighbor. And of course, Romans 12:13, I believe it is, says that we are to be contributing to the needs of the saints and seek to show hospitality. Yeah? And so it's something that, not that they simply did in the first century, it's something that we, should be practicing today. Hebrews 13, I think it's the early verses, maybe verse 2. Likewise, say, do not neglect hospitality, for in doing so, some have entertained, y'all know that verse, right? What? Angels unawares, yeah? Now, I'm not naive, and so we all recognize that we've come through a difficult period with COVID, and it's been challenging the way we interact with people and share our homes and that kind of thing. So God recognizes the environment in which we live, but he still says, seek to what? To demonstrate what? Hospitality. And so it's something that we all need to be thinking about as we begin this text together. And just think about, is your heart open that way today? In the environment in which we live, are you open to sharing your home? So then you notice that Matthew does not give her name, but John says that her name was Mary, right? You notice here, and get back to Matthew 26, you notice verse 7, he says, a woman came up to him with an alabaster flask, right? A very expensive ointment. But you remember, I just read in John 12:3 that what? It was who? Mary. Okay? So I'm wanting to present this so that you can follow along and see that I didn't just make claims. I'm saying that I believe that the story can be, every gospel writer didn't what? Give all the details. That's the reason we have four gospels. is that you get a different perspective and different facts right from each one. I believe, again, that this was Mary, the sister of Martha and Lazarus. Now, as the story is presented to us, Mary apparently possessed a very expensive and extremely expensive flask, of ointment. As a matter of fact, Mark indicates that this little vial of ointment was worth probably a year's salary. That's something to think about, isn't it? A little vial, a little vase, or whatever you want to call it. They call it a flask of ointment. It could be, think of it, you know, I don't, some of us are retired, but I mean, you think about when you did work. Think about working an entire year for, you see, a little vial of ointment. Do you understand? So this was expensive stuff. I shouldn't call it stuff. You know what I'm saying. This was expensive. This is an expensive item. I think that text, for those of you who are making notes, is Mark 14 and verse 5. It indicates that it was worth a year's labor. Now, what we notice here in our text, oh boy, system going and it just kept going. What we notice in our text is that Mary poured the oil on Jesus' head and his feet and what? And wiped it with her hair. Right? Go back to Matthew 26. It's the latter part of verse 7. And she poured it on his head as he reclined at the table. You see? Now, again, you get these other details from John 12:3. You might remember when I read it. She anointed him with the ointment, and John emphasizes that she put it on his what? His feet also, and she what? She wiped his feet with her hair. Now, most of you have been with me long enough to know that when you've looked at this text, you know that it was customary, particularly in the East, where you got dusty trails and roads and all, that when someone comes to visit you with their sandals, probably more like the open sandals that we wear, that having traveled there, their feet get dirty, right? From the dust of the trail. And so it was customary when you go to someone's house and they're being hospitable for them to, you know, wash your feet. So that as you're visiting them, you can at least have the sense that my feet are clean. Okay? And of course, you know, Jesus used that analogy when he's talking to the disciples. He says, I'm giving you a lesson here as he washed their own feet, right? And so it was customary that this foot washing, it was customary to take place. But you see, Mary broke Jewish tradition in that you wash your feet, by the way, with water. I mean, you know, you've seen it typically where the water is used. She broke custom in several ways, but certainly one of the ways was that she used this expensive ointment. Think of it. To clean the dust off his feet. A year's salary. You see, poured out on his feet. And then she didn't have, typically you'd have a towel or something to dry the feet. She didn't, so what did she do? She used her hair. Now, hair was a woman's pride, and, you know, I guess we use the phrase pride and joy today. And it was. Because God had established that. You know, you come to the New Testament, and that's the reason Paul would say to the women that you handle your hair in a way that's what, respectful, because it should demonstrate that you have what, pride. in the hair that God has given you. And so you get the picture here. This is really pretty radical stuff that Mary's doing here. Radical. And so as this has taken place then, I want to make one comment here. Many of you will know that there's another episode in Luke. I thought I jotted it down here. Yeah, Luke 7, 36 through 50. There's another episode of a woman who comes. The Pharisee is giving Jesus a dinner, and this woman comes, right, to the dinner. And oftentimes these two are confused, but these are different situations. You remember the woman that came to the Pharisee's house was a wicked. She was a woman that had a awful reputation in town, you know, immorality and, you know, all of those kind of things. And you remember the Pharisee and others around said, if this man were really a prophet, you see, he'd know the kind of woman he's dealing with. Now, it's similar in that she was crying and her tears, right, were cleansing the feet of Jesus. But you see the difference. She wiped it with her hand. So don't confuse the two. You all right? So I'm saying that this particular episode was Mary, the sister of Martha and Lazarus. The other episode was another woman. Okay? Even though some people believe that that might have been Mary, the Mary that he cast out, you know, the seven demons. So her name might have been Mary, but don't confuse the two. Everybody good? Okay. Excuse me. Now, I spent a lot of time kind of painting that picture for you so you can notice this next scene. That most of those who witnessed this event perceived it to be a wasteful use, you see, of the expensive oil. Now, even though you and I look at it in our particular culture and environment, and we can't understand it because we've read the story so many times, but you have to remember, this is the first time that they've seen this. It's like Peter walking on water. He hadn't done that before. They haven't seen anybody take an item that you'd have to spend an entire year to earn and then to pour it on somebody's feet. This is new to them, okay? Now, even though we're not trying to justify it, what we're trying to do is to enter into the scene. You get it? This is new to them. And they just cannot fathom why this couldn't be used for something different. Now, this is really important to get your brain wrapped around this, because you see the emphasis has shifted away from Jesus now to what? The oil, isn't it? What are they indignant about? The way the oil was used. Yeah. Aren't they? And so you got Matthew 26. Keep losing my place here. Matthew 26. And verse 8, and when the disciples saw it, they were indignant, saying, why this waste? For this could have been sold for a large sum and given to the poor. They say the same thing in Mark 14. And just to, again, try to verify why I'm saying what I am about John 12. Verse 4, but Judas Iscariot, one of the disciples, he who was about to betray him, said, why was this ointment not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor? He said this not because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief, and having charge of the money bag, he used it to help himself to what ever was put into it. And so when you read John's account, you think that it was only Judas, right? It's like when you're reading the gospel, you read an account Peter, who said, Lord, is it I? But then you read a full gospel account and it says what? And they all, what? Said the same thing. And so it wasn't just Judas who perceived this to be, right, a wasteful use of the ointment. They all did. They all did. You're still tracking me? All right. I'm deliberately trying to move slow so that you can see why I reached the conclusions that I did. The disciples, and as we leave this point, I want you to think with me. Now, keep thinking. The disciples think that there's a better use of expensive items. There's a better use of costly items that you should not be sacrificing it to Jesus. You can use it for what? Something better. Now you gotta get your arms around this. And as I usually say, don't jump, don't condemn the disciples too quick, because I want you to think about that. Everybody makes decisions about how they're going to use costly things, don't we? It's not so much among, I guess, men when it comes to the things in the house and crystals and that kind of, you know. But for sure, if a woman has some expensive crystal, you know, on a table or whatever, they're going to definitely tell that child what. Don't touch that. Right? I mean, we've all had to deal with younger children. Why? That's way too expensive. You know, something that's always baffled me is, I don't know how y'all grew up. Did y'all grow up with what are the things called? You know, you have these credenza kind of things with glass in front of them where you put dishes in them. What is it? What did you say?
China cabinet or curio.
Yeah, well, y'all know what I'm talking about. I don't even remember what we called them when I was growing up, but you know what I'm saying. We had one, China cabinet, you know, that kind of thing. It's always been amazing to me, and my mother did the same thing. What do you put in China cabinet? What? Very, quote, what? Expensive items. Do you ever eat on them?
Once a year.
What, you do?
Once a year.
Okay, well, I mean, most people, I mean, at my house, they were, you didn't eat on them, you just looked at them. And you think about that, isn't it? Why? It's too expensive. It costs too much money to eat on. The dishes now, but it costs too much. You understand the thinking here, is that this is perfume, and it should be what? Used on the body, but not on somebody's feet. And certainly not what? All of it. I know this sounds ridiculous, but you know, sometimes I don't know what expensive perfume and cologne costs today, but what is it? I have no idea what it is. What is it? Hundreds of dollars. I mean, I'm sure that there's some very expensive perfume and cologne that can cost hundreds of dollars. Now, when you get that, I'm spending way too much time here, but I want you to get this. When you get some very expensive cologne, what do you do? You get one, no, you get one little what? One little squirt, or, you know, maybe, how do you do a squirt on this side, a squirt on that side? I saw on TV, I'm just digressing too much. I saw a guy on TV, the way they did it, is they sprayed it up in the air and run through it. You know, to get it, I guess, to get it everywhere. But my point is, all that you get is one little what? You get a little squirt here. Imagine opening the bottle up. Now, I know this sounds just bizarre. And just taking a $600-$800 perfume and just pouring it on you. Not only that, pouring it on your feet. I'm just trying to give you some perspective here, okay? Now, that doesn't come anywhere close, because nobody works a whole year. I mean, I shouldn't say nobody, but I mean, in this room, nobody works a whole year for what, $700-$800. Imagine that bottle of perfume maybe costs $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, $90,000. And you open it up and pour it out on your feet. See? The point. I know I'm spending a lot of time here, but I want you to get the concept. Because the emphasis has shifted from Jesus to what? The ointment. You get it? Why the waste? Why the waste? And many feel the same way today. So there's better uses that I can make with things that cost me, that are expensive to me, so people don't give generously, not to the work of the Lord, because there's better use, you see, for my money. They don't give cheerfully to the Lord because there's better use. They don't give sacrificially because there's better use, you see. Why waste my money? When you know how they do it nowadays, because the preacher's just going to steal it. Or you know what they say, they're just going to waste it. They're going to find some project and go and help the poor. You see? Or whatever the case may be. I can find better use with my money. See? Same thing happens today. So when you hear Brother Lay and others who are addressing the congregation from 2 Corinthians, where it says God loves what? A cheerful giver. That's what he's saying. Give generously. Give cheerfully. Not begrudgingly. Not under duress. And that's the reason it's so sad to see churches that set up these schemes to embarrass people to give. You ever been in an environment? This line is for, you see. You ever been in environments like that? This line is for the people that's going to do this. And why do people do that? You see? Embarrass people into giving. And so that's not the way giving should be done. And if your mindset is that I got better use for my money, then keep it. Right? Because the motive, if your motive is not right, you haven't really, I'm just digressing so much. But you remember when Jesus was there watching all of the folks giving at the treasury? Y'all remember that story? He's just sitting there watching. All of the people that came and gave large sums didn't come in on any of that. Who caught his attention? Gave the least amount of money, but what did she do? Gave all that she had. You see? Generously, cheerfully, sacrificially. You get it? And so, I just want to leave this point with you thinking about that. You need to think about, I'll get to that at the end. But this is a mindset in our culture, is that we got so much wasteful stuff going on in the church. Okay, and I don't want to give to it. I don't want to be a part of it. Okay. Now, the next question that we run into is actually a question from Jesus. You see, now this question that we've examined here came from the disciples, but the next question comes from Jesus. You got you back in 26. Look at verse 10. But Jesus, aware of this, said to them, "Why do you trouble the woman?" Yeah, you see? And this is interesting. Jesus responds to their question with what? With a question. They said, "Why the waste?" Jesus said, "Why do you trouble the woman?" You see the point? Questions can oftentimes be used to teach people. If you use them very wisely. Use them very wisely. People like to really criticize you when you flip it back on them. You ever have people do that? They ask you a question, and you flip it right back the question to them. And don't let people intimidate you with you like that. I mean, that may be a very wise thing that you've done. You see? And so Jesus answers their question with a question. Why? Because the question requires them to now stop and consider what he just said. The question requires consideration. It requires contemplation. It requires them to actually do, they might not have done a deep dive, but at least it causes you to examine your motive. Why? Why do I need to examine my motive? Because he said, why are you troubling this woman? Y'all all over Mary's case. Why? Why is this? Why are y'all so? Matter of fact, you know the New Testament, the Greek uses the word what? Indignant. Why are you so indignant? Why are you so outraged at this woman giving this expensive ointment to me? That's really what she did, isn't it? She gave it to who? To Jesus. They couldn't see that. All they could see is that it's being poured out on his feet. Or his head being anointed, you see. That's what happens sometimes when you've got this protective concept in your mind. And all of us have it. We've all been through it. When you buy a new car, and that car is new, you know, it's a certain way you park. It's a certain way that people have to sit. You don't want them to have any, nothing in your pockets that can poke holes. You know what I mean? We're protective when something is new. Again, when I was growing up, y'all, I don't know how y'all did it, but you have couches in your house. Do y'all ever put plastic on your couch? Why do we do that? Protect. It's considered to be what? Valuable. So we protect it. And so that's the way we can get with our finances. We can cuddle it so much that we really don't want anything to get in, even Jesus. Okay? Why do you trouble the woman? Then he goes on to explain why Mary should be commended and not criticized. You see? You back in verse 10? For she has done a beautiful thing. Isn't that a wonderful sentence? She has done a beautiful thing to me. For you always have the poor with you, but you will not always have me. What an amazing thing. So rather than you criticizing Mary, you should what? Be commending her. But you can't see it because your mind is so cluttered with what you're cuddling and clinging on to. Paul would go on to say that the love of money is what? The root of all kinds of evil. Then we'd find Jesus saying, man cannot serve God and what? Mammon or money, right? And so you can see, even among believers, that this is something that you have to be open to. You still got remnants of that protective mindset of stuff that's expensive. It's in all of us. Everybody in this room has got something that's yawned, that's yours. And don't mess with this. We're protective. And I'm not being critical. I'm just saying that this is something that we have to work through. We love to sing, I surrender all. But is that true? All to Jesus what I surrender. All to him. So Jesus makes this Revelation, then he draws their attention to what I call redemptive and eternal matters in verses 12 and 13. He says, in pouring this ointment on my body, she has done it to prepare me for burial. Truly I say to you that wherever this gospel is proclaimed in the whole world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her. And I do find that interesting. He said it'll be told in what? In memory of her. Isn't that wonderful? To see how Jesus not only commended her, but he showed how this simple sacrificial act is going to, it wasn't done for that kind of attention, but Jesus said she will be remembered for this, right? You've been very patient, and so let's try to wrap things up. Before I go straight to the conclusion, I got some things I want you to think about, all right? The first one is this. Why was Mary criticized and reprimanded so harshly by others in this small group that also loved and served Jesus? Everybody in the group loved and served Jesus. Well, why was she criticized and reprimanded, you see, so strongly? Get it? Why was her loving act or her loving gift of sacrifice considered to be excessive by people that love Christ, that serve Christ, that have supposedly surrendered their life to Christ? Why was her gift considered to be so excessive? Her loving sacrifice had spiritual significance. Now get this, now follow me. It was challenging to write these sentences, but I want you to listen to them. Her loving sacrifice had spiritual significance that her less mature peers, that is the disciples, could not see. You follow what I said? There was significance in what she did that you wouldn't think of it this way. The less mature disciples couldn't see it. Whenever Mary was physically in the presence of Jesus, nothing took priority over her time with him, wasn't it? You remember that? Martha got all upset when Jesus visited their house at another occasion. And what? All that Mary was doing was sitting at his feet because he was the highest priority. You see, not the collard greens and ham hock and what, you know, Jews didn't eat pork and that kind of thing. But you know what I'm saying. I'm sure all that food was smelling good in there, but all that Mary was concerned about is to sit at his feet and enjoy his presence. You see? Mary waited in peace for Jesus to call her after Lazarus died. Martha didn't, did she? Martha rushed out. But Mary was a patient one to wait. Mary had confidence. In this act that she's doing here, Mary had confidence that this was God's will, and she obeyed. She didn't consult with anybody. This is what God wants me to do, and I'm going to do it. Because it belongs to who? Me. You get it? Mary had a mature, confident, and loving relationship with Christ beyond her peers, who spent much more time with him. Isn't that something? All of these disciples spent a whole lot more time with Jesus than Mary. She had a confident, mature, and loving relationship with those who had even received more teaching from Jesus. With those who had seen him work more miracles than Mary. She still was more mature than them, more mature than those who had experienced, had been with him in the experience of prayer. They'd seen him pray and the power of prayer, and yet Mary was more mature than them. She was more mature, even more than those who had had all of the practical experiences in life and ministry. It's an amazing thing that a person can be
mature beyond their, what's the old saying, mature beyond their youth, your years or whatever it is. And that's the way it is in the kingdom. That's the reason you shouldn't try to judge a person's maturity by how long they've been a Christian. Whether or not they went to seminary, you see, or how many expensive books that they have. People can have a deep, sincere love for Christ and not have all of those things. Far beyond all those who spent more time studying and, you see, doing this thing and that thing. That's what they missed. There's no way she can know what she's doing. You see, that was the idea. We know better. We know how she ought to be doing this. And you got people to deal with you the same way. You know, they think you're naive. Yeah? And treat you that way. Imagine how Mary felt. The ones who ought to be encouraging her were dissuading her. She'd done this from her heart. There was nothing, there were no ill motives associated with it. But all she's getting from her peers is negative. All right? Now, I want to remind you, this is all happening in the last week of Jesus' life. He's preparing to go die for them, and this is what's going on. Isn't it amazing? Mary was not concerned about people's opinions of the way she demonstrated her sacrificial love for Christ. Mary did not need to consult with other people to determine that this was God's will for her. She knew this is what God wanted her to do with this ointment. Mary was accustomed to being criticized for making Jesus the highest priority. I just told you. When she made Jesus the highest priority in her own house, Martha criticized her, didn't she? She was criticized by the disciples for making Jesus the highest priority. So she was accustomed to people misunderstanding her love for Christ. But Jesus affirmed, he commended, and he defended Mary when she made this sacrifice for him that less mature believers could not understand. When Martha felt that Mary spent too much time with Jesus in devotion, you know what she did. I just told you. You can find that in Luke chapter 10. When the disciples felt that she was wasteful in this use, they wanted to know, why did she waste this? You see, so this is all critical criticism of this woman who is pouring out her heart. So my brothers, my sisters, do not be intimidated or dissuaded by other Christians who feel they know how best you should be using your resources. You know you've been around people like this. A lot of times in your own family.
How you spend all that money at that church?
You ever had people tell you that?
You give way too much money over there.
I remember when I was first became a Christian, and y'all do know that our perspective is that we're not under the law, so we don't tithe because of what they did in the Old Testament. Right? We just believe that tithing is presented to us as a place to start. So you want to know how do I start? Where do I start? Well, you got a principle here, right? The principle that's laid out in the Bible is that if you start with 10%, you go from there. In the New Testament, it says, give as God has convicted you and convinced you what in your heart. But you see, he gives you a guideline so that you ain't starting out, you know what I mean. If we were left to ourselves, we'd be all over the place, wouldn't we? Just because it's a hard month. I take what I was going to give. You're right.
and use it for something else. If I was left to myself. But thank God we got a good father. And he's a good teacher. So, but the principle enables you to give. And I remember, again, I guess I was about to tell you my story. I was shocked as a young Christian to find out how many folks been in the church for 20, 30 years, and they thought that was bizarre. You don't give 10%? I mean, as a new Christian, I just read. You know what I mean? I didn't know. I didn't understand, you know, the liberty in the New Testament. But I did see that this was a principle. And I'm going to tell you, that was a big deal. There were many, I think I might have told y'all before, after Alma and I got paid, and, you know, we'd given what we were supposed to the Lord, we'd only have a couple hundred dollars left. Try to make it through the next couple of weeks. But you know what happened? It's just like the two fish and the little loaves of bread. God took that little $200 and it covered the whole time. I can't explain it. But I had all these older people in church, been in church for, as I said, 20, 30 years. And they just could not understand that. Why are you going to do that? You ain't keeping enough. Y'all don't have enough to live on. You see? So don't let people do that to you. When you know God has convinced you to do something for him, it's unto him, right? Remember what Paul said? Whether we eat or drink or whatever we do is for the what? For the glory of God. Yeah, I know. That's been a long one. I didn't intend it that way, but I feel like this is an issue that can affect all of us. And it's an amazing thing that this was the very thing that was going on in the final week of Jesus' life. You got folks arguing about how people can best use their time when it comes to Jesus. Best use their valuables, right? Don't let other Christians who feel like they can judge when you have spent enough time. People tell you, you're always up there, you ever heard people say, you're always at church. Well, how did they become a judge of where you should spend your time? Don't let people become a judge of how you spend your money. Don't let other people become a judge of how you spend your talent. Don't let other people become a judge of how you spend any other resource that you plan to use for Christ. People who feel like you are just wasting your life. You're just wasting your life away at that old church. Mary's example here. Follow Mary's example here. Have a mature, peaceful, confident, and loving relationship with Jesus so that you know his will and the sacrifice he wants you to make for him. Whatever your alabaster flash may be, just be willing to offer it whenever Christ has need of it. Whatever it is. That's my message for today in this week leading up to the time when Jesus gave it, he paid it all. We need to examine what we're willing to pay, what we're willing to give. You know what I mean? To him who gave it all, what are you willing to give? Are you going to let people's opinion about you dissuade you? Lord, I want to thank you for these few minutes and where I've not been able to communicate clearly. Would you just